Coming up on Tech News Today, Apple wants to map your insides, or map some insides anyway. Yahoo buys a new service called Sumly, and the FAA may allow some electronics during takeoff and landing. All that and more coming up.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today for Monday, March 25th, 2013. Tech News Today is brought to you by GoToMeeting with HD Faces by Citrix, the powerfully simple way to meet and collaborate with colleagues and clients from anywhere. You can share the same screen and see each other face-to-face with HD video conferencing, even from an iPad. Sign up for your 30-day free trial today. Visit GoToMeeting.com, click on the Try It Free button, and use promo code TNT. And by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets. Find out what your used iPad, Samsung Galaxy, and other smartphones are worth at gazelle.com. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Maya Zachter.
And I'm Jason Howell.
And this is the show we keep you up to date on the most important stories in the tech world. Put them in context for you, starting with the top 10 stories of the day in the news feed. Two K Games BioShock Infinite comes out tomorrow, and the reviews are stellar. Metacritic has an average score of 95 out of 100 for the PC version, based on 33 reviews. Console versions have fewer published reviews, but Xbox 360 still average a 96 on 9 reviews, and the PS3 a 95 out of 100 on 11 reviews. Seems like a hit.
Apple's acquired indoor mapping specialist Wi-Fi Slam in an effort to beef up its map surface. Service. The new technology could allow Apple to offer maps within buildings with an accuracy up to 8 feet. Google already offers indoor locations to its Street View product. In fact, the TWiT Studio is one of them. If you've never taken a tour, it's kind of fun. The Wall Street Journal reports that Apple paid about $20 million for Wi-Fi Slam.
Windows Blue, the big update to Windows 8, has leaked online. On the cosmetic side, you'll be able to make even smaller tiles on your start screen, kind of like Windows Phone. Blue also has greater SkyDrive integration with the ability to automatically upload photos and videos, kind of like Windows Phone. There's even the ability to snap together up to 4 apps at one time on the screen, kind of like regular Windows. What progress.
For some time now, the electronics manufacturing industry has been in sort of a quiet panic over China's near monopoly of rare earth minerals that are needed for making everything from chips to catalytic converters. Japan has announced a find of, quote, astronomically high levels of rare earth deposits around 5.8 kilometers under the ocean surface near Minami Torishima Island, southeast of Tokyo. Telegraph reports Tokyo University's Yoshihiro Kato says a ship supply could meet Japan's annual needs. It'll take 2 years of exploration, though, before production ramps up.
Yahoo has bought Sumly, the mobile news reader app, for about $30 million. A lot of acquisition news this week so far. Sumly will close down their app, and the team of five will join Yahoo. And though Sumly had less than 1 million downloads, its AI technology to summarize news is attractive to a company like Yahoo that's looking to beef up their mobile presence.
CyanogenMod founder Steve Kondik announced he has left his software engineering job at Samsung in the Google Plus post. Now, the post's main focus is the Galaxy S4, where he casually mentions he left the company, and in the comments he says he departed not because of anything in particular. My theory is that Samsung wanted to rename Steve into S-Teve, which caused him to S-Plit.
Either that or it sounds like he just wandered out. I don't know. I didn't mean to leave, and I can't find my way back. Google Glass isn't even shipping a product yet, but West Virginia wants to be prepared. Delegate Gary G. Howell proposed a bill in the West Virginia House of Delegates prohibiting use of a wearable computer with a head-mounted display while driving. Howell says he's a fan of Google Glass, but worries about the safety of teens while driving and feels this is a natural extension of existing laws against texting while driving. He also wasn't confident the bill would pass, but he believes some version eventually will.
Oh, being a founder isn't exactly what it used to be. Michael Dell's attempt to take Dell private has been challenged by a couple of rival bids. The board has released a statement saying that it received two alternative acquisition proposals from investment group Blackstone and activist investor Carl Icahn. Dell also published details of the bids, and guess what? Both offer a higher per share price than Michael Dell's $13.65 million proposal, which valued the company at $24.1 billion.
The Ouya console will ship with emulators for loads of old gaming consoles, but that's nothing compared to the Retro N5. Joystick reports that the latest version of the Retro N, coming from Hyperkins, adds an actual cartridge slot for Famicom games. That's the Japanese version of the original Nintendo Entertainment System. Console also supports NES, SNES, Genesis, and Game Boy Advance cartridges. Sends the video upscaled over HDMI with controller ports for legacy controllers and Bluetooth controllers that are included with the console. Hyperkins hopes to release the console in July for less than $100.
T-Mobile has gone contract-free starting today. The lowest-cost plan is $50 per month, and that gets you unlimited talk, text, and web. That plan includes 500 megabytes of data at T-Mobile's highest speeds. After that allotment, you get 2G speeds. Speaking of speeds, TMONews.com reports that T-Mobile's LTE network will go live on March 26th in 7 markets, including Washington, D.C., Las Vegas, and Baltimore.
This episode of Tech News Today brought to you by Citrix and GoToMeeting with HD Faces. Meetings are essential to the way we work. It's an opportunity to share some ideas, do some problem solving, develop creative solutions. But if your team's spread out in different locations like we are today, coming together can be almost impossible. The flight times, it can be expensive unless you use GoToMeeting with HD Faces, the powerfully simple way to meet and collaborate online. We do it all the time at Twit, especially when we're talking with clients or people who are all over the country. Meet and GoToMeeting with HD Faces, then you can explain what you're talking about. You can see people eye to eye. No matter where everyone is located, GoToMeeting allows you to share the same screen, making it easier to be on the same page. And with built-in HD video conferencing, you can see each other face-to-face. It's easy to launch or join a meeting from anywhere. You can use your computer. You can use your phone. You can use your tablet. It's not some big complex thing you got to wrap your head around. You just launch it. Now you can present from your iPod if you've got a presentation you want to show to the group. And you get to see their reactions to it. Try GoToMeeting free for 30 days. Don't wait. For this special offer, visit GoToMeeting.com, click the Try It Free button, and use the promo code TNT. Remember, use the promo code TNT. Go to meeting. Meeting is believing. Joining us now to discuss some of the stories in the news today, very happy to have Dan Benjamin, founder of the 5x5 Network, on the show. How's it going, Dan?
Hey, it's going great. Thanks. You know what? I told you, Tom, anytime. I'm here for you anytime.
Thanks for having me. I'm so pleased to hear that. And likewise.
I know you were worried. Yeah, thanks. When are you going to come on my shows? We're going to talk about this.
When you want me, I'm there.
Every day, 5 days a week.
No big deal.
We'll talk about it. Later.
I get it now. All right. Yeah. We'll talk. All right. Let's start with Apple buying that Wi-Fi slam company that Sarah was talking about in the news, Fuse. Ayaz, what's going on with this?
Yeah, so Apple bought this company for about $20 million, according to the Wall Street Journal. And Wi-Fi slam's technology is using ambient Wi-Fi signals that are already present in buildings. Now, Google's got a similar service, but they use signal towers and nearby hotspots. And Google also has accepted over 10,000 floor plans from other businesses. So Apple, they didn't give a statement exactly what they're going to do with this company or this technology. Dan, do you use indoor map apps? And do you think Apple can spin this into something that's a brilliant new feature? Or is this just a little checkbox?
You know, I don't know. I usually can find my way around a building once I'm inside of it pretty well. So I'm not really sure why they're going to be doing this. Except, you know, you always think that when it comes to positioning of like devices and things like that, find my phone. I don't really know off the top of my head. I mean, 20 million, that's not that much, you know, for Apple. But the Wi-Fi slam guys have got to be happy about this. What is the feature? Finding your phone within, because it's what, 8 foot is how far they can do it apart?
Well, I mean, I don't think it's defined your device. I mean, I guess you could use it that way, but I think it's more about like if you're in a mall or an airport or something, you can find your way around that. Sarah, is that something you're interested in?
Well, it's not so much anything that I'm interested in, but I think that when you said it's sort of like a checkbox, it's something that Google is offering, and Google has had a pretty good success having businesses submit information to Google so that they can also be, you know, if you're searching for a business in Google search, if there is an indoor view, it often pops up in the right-hand area, which I sometimes click through just out of curiosity. So if Apple sees that there is a demand for something like this, and $20 million, like Dan said, is not a lot of money for Apple, then sure, why not buy a company that can at least have Apple offer something in its Maps product where people have less of a reason to point to Google and say, well, it has something that Apple doesn't.
Tom, do you think you'd find yourself using a map app that's, oh, I'm inside an airport, I know where I'm going, or do you just actually look at signs?
Oh, sure. We could all say that. You know, who needs maps for driving? You've got signs there too. I there are definitely times in airports and in malls where I would like to have a detailed map that tells me, you know, specifically like that's where that thing is that you're trying to find, instead of going to that stupid directory and looking for the "you are here" thing and then scratching my head and trying to find the number that goes with it. It would be very convenient. This sort of thing is pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it seems like Apple would, if they actually use this and they make their Maps application any better, or they break this out as a separate application as some kind of, not augmented reality, but the fact that you can find your way around inside of a building, I think they would be promoting that in a way that they would act as if they're the first company to ever do this. I know Google's got this. I haven't tried it very often. I don't find myself thinking, okay, I'm going to get to my phone, because I haven't been trained yet to think that's an option. Because usually you need an application per like location. And I just don't know if this is going to be a major thing until Apple's just like, hey, look, we got this thing.
I think they're trying to undermine Google. They're trying to get ahead and give Apple Maps a win, which it desperately needs, to say, hey, this can do something that Google Maps can't, or any other maps can't, or at least can't do very well. Whether this is the company to do it, I don't really know. And I don't know how long it will take them to integrate it into Apple Maps. I mean, they got WWDC coming up in what, 3 months?
Dan, do you think they could Apple survive another mess? I mean, the thing is, the way Wi-Fi Slam uses or finds your location is using the ambient signals versus Google, which is going to have better accuracy because it's using signal towers and things. Could Apple withstand rolling out a product that might not be up to snuff when it comes to maps?
Well, I mean, you make a great point, and I would say, you know, in a lot of ways, Apple wants to say that maps are getting better, but at the same time, I get the general sense that they don't want to talk about it too much. They release some enhancements. They say, oh, it's better for maps in Japan now, and then they're kind of back off of it a little bit. I still feel like there's a part of this, as you guys are pointing out astutely, that yes, this will be very useful if you're trying to find your way inside of a big shopping mall or an airport or something. But the thing that just keeps jumping out at me is that there might be some other value here for identifying where you are. And people in the chat room are saying, can this be used to track you? Could it be used to track where you are, where your device is? I think the maps thing is obviously important to Apple, but can they risk something else at this point? No, but the flip side of that is, like you guys are saying again, hey, we've got something that Google doesn't have. We have these interiors of buildings and places that, yeah, they rely on Wi-Fi, but now you can find your way around in a way that you can't with Google.
You'll get lost, but it's beautiful.
Yeah.
That's the whole thing.
That's right.
Find my iPhone 3D.
There you go.
We know your elevation. All right. Another acquisition in the news today. Yahoo acquiring Sumly. They've been on a little bit of a shopping spree. What do they get with Sumly, Sarah?
Well, we talked about Sumly a few months ago when it was at least went live in the App Store for iOS. Yahoo bought Sumly for about $30 million. Apparently, most of that is cash, a little bit of stock. And it's kind of a bummer for those of us who use Sumly, because the app is going to shut down, but presumably will have new life within the Yahoo property in some form. The Sumly team, just about five of them, will join Yahoo as well. And there was actually some talk that Yahoo was interested in Sumly even back in December. All Things D had been reporting that. Sumly, if you're not familiar or you don't remember, uses algorithms and AI really to summarize the news for people who are busy and like to read a lot of stuff but don't necessarily have the time to read long, thought out articles on a regular basis. So you want the news, you want it sort of in summary form. And in my experience, Sumly worked pretty well. Some of the time you'd kind of get a little bit of that, ooh, the AI isn't working so well. That's a weird sentence because it's pulling from a variety of sources to figure out what actually the nuts and bolts of a news story is. There's also a lot of attention because this particular app is sort of unique. Not only does Yahoo need a lot of, you know, presence in mobile, but Sumly's founder, Nick Delozio, who's British, is 17. So technically, Yahoo has been around longer than he has, which is kind of funny. There's an All Things D article this morning that Yahoo's going hipster because this is such a hipster app. I don't really see why this is a hipster app besides the fact that its founder is really, really young. But you see that this trend is all over the place. We've got LinkedIn rumored to be buying Pulse. CNN bought Zeit quite some time ago. You've got a competing service called Circa. I talked about it on i5 a couple months ago, which is more of a human-powered, editorial-powered news summary site where Sumly is truly basically run by robots. And I wonder if this is just one of these things that everybody wants the cool app that's designed to help you read as much, in Yahoo's case, Yahoo News as possible, in a way that seems like the future. Dan, were you using Sumly at all? Does this make sense as an acquisition?
I mean, I think it makes sense. I haven't been using it because, I'm old-fashioned. I just read things, the full article myself. But I think this is definitely a great way for Yahoo to kind of jump in and try and address this issue that we all have, which is there's a lot of information coming out every single day, and we don't necessarily know if it's worth our time to spend reading the whole article. How can we summarize it in such a way that's not just something that the author put out? I really like the idea about this. Everybody loves robots. I mean, let's be honest. Any kind of AI that can save us time, that's the dream and the promise of AI in the background. The kid's 17, though. And that's something that's interesting because I think in as much as Yahoo wants to have more acknowledgement and recognition in coming out with cool things in tech, this is a great way for them to do that. This is a great way for them to also get that kind of talent on board and get the people who had enough vision to say, yeah, let's come out with a new way to use computers to save people time that's different from anything else that's happening right now. I think this is a really good acquisition for them.
Tom, do you see reading Yahoo News in short robotic form? Sumly somehow getting baked into the Yahoo News experience, especially on mobile devices?
Yeah, I'm like Dan. I read signs at malls and I read whole articles, and I wonder, looking at this, if Yahoo, and maybe they should do this, whether they're planning on it or not, are looking at taking on Google News. Google News is sort of moribund. It sometimes works really well, sometimes doesn't. I don't know how many people actually use Google News, whether it's in Google Reader territory or up closer to search. But it's an algorithm-generated list of headlines and summaries, and they've been in constant trouble for how they use it. And I think they've shied off of it a little bit because of all the controversy they've gotten into. If Yahoo comes along with something that's really hip, really cool, does a much better job of summarizing the important news of the day for you, then I think they could potentially have something that turns some heads and gets people away from a Google product.
The thing is, Yahoo, like, they curate a ton of content. They have a bunch of syndication deals. They have their own original content. If they could somehow have accurate summaries for each of the things they have, or if they're even indexing those summaries, their search results could also be better. Because if you want to find what's actually the resource, that what's the best version of this, the shortest version, if Yahoo could provide that first as a search result with, like, oh, by the way, this is the one you want to read, just read these four lines and you'll know everything, I think that could be big not only for news but for their search engine too.
No, I think you're right. And I just want to jump in. And I remember there was a story back, I think it was a couple of years ago, where they were saying something that was like 40 or 45% of people who are reading Google News are just scanning the headline. They never actually go much further than that. So if that's true, and it makes sense that it is true, I think we all do the same thing when we're trying to say, is this interesting? Something like Sumly or that kind of technology to make what Yahoo's news offering is better than what Google's news offering is, you're making a really good point.
It's intriguing. Let's bring some good news to everyone, or at least some potential good news. Nick Bilton at the New York Times has a couple sources from a working group that the FAA set up last year. They started meeting in January to figure out a new policy for electronics on planes. Now, it doesn't sound like they're going to change anything regarding cell phones, but the group plans to introduce findings by July 31st. And according to Bilton's sources, they will allow reading devices during takeoff and landing. That means tablets and things like Kindles would not have to be turned off. They would have to be switched to airplane mode. Now, a couple things that get in the way of this. They don't want to turn flight attendants into the social police. They don't want to make flight attendants have to be experts in all the different airplane modes of every different device. So that's what they're working on, is trying to figure out how to make this an easy thing to explain and an easy thing to enforce. That seems like a tall order to me, but there's a lot of pressure on them. This group is made up of companies like Amazon, the Consumer Electronics Association, flight manufacturers like Boeing, the Association of Flight Attendants Union, the FCC, other aircraft makers. All the vested interests are working on this. But it sounds like by the end of this year, we might have a new policy that allows you to keep reading your Kindle when you take off on an airplane. Should it have been this hard? Dan, what do you think of this story?
No, I think this is great. It's about time too. And I know people who don't ever use airplane mode, and it scares me a little bit when I know that their phone is on, you know, and you people know exactly who I'm talking about. But this is the thing. Finally, why are these guys taking so long for this? There have been so many reports out there. There's so many folks who are saying this is totally fine. This is totally safe. And for them to finally do this, it's very welcome. But one thing you haven't pointed out, I see in your notes here, electric razors mm-hmm. can be used through all flight phases. So, you know, you can be shaving on takeoff and landing. People need to just be aware of this. But the main thing for me is everybody wants to read. And you know what? I see people do this on the flights all the time. When they're taking off and landing, that's the scary part for flyers who don't, you know, who get a little nervous. That's the scary part. That's where the human beings are controlling the planes instead of the autopilot. And that's the part where people get nervous. And you want something to read, right? You want your magazine or you want your book. Or most of us these days, the digital folks, we've got a Kindle. We've got a device that we want to read, an iPad mini, whatever it is. Please just let us use those things.
I see, even though I think this is a step in the right direction for sure, I see potential confusion like never before. I mean, I've had flight attendants tell me that I can't have headphones in my ears because really? They're just so afraid of what, I mean, when I'm not actually listening to anything. They're
Sarah, yeah. Are you a confident flyer? Do you get a little nervous?
Do I get nervous about flying?
Yeah. When you're flying,
I see. Because I think that, no, I'm not. Yeah, I'm a nervous flyer, but, you know, a nice glass of wine is going to help me with that. It has nothing to do with the fact that tablets may or may not be on airplane mode. Also, if a tablet that's in airplane mode is a reading device, then isn't a laptop that has its Wi-Fi turned off also right. a or reading if, yeah, device? I mean, there are a lot of things I'm going to be doing on my tablet in airplane mode. It isn't necessarily reading, you know, off of my Kindle app. I can watch movie. I can play games. So it's sort of like, well, where, you know, we need to have a clear distinction on what you're allowed to do.
Right.
And what you're not, because it's not just about reading books.
These rules are about social behavior management. They're actually not about the safety of the plane anymore. I think the only safety issue is the FAA is still a little nervous about cell phone transmissions during takeoff and landing. Otherwise, they'd just be saying, yeah, you can have your electronics on. They want to make sure that they turn off those cell phone transmissions, which is why they're probably not going to allow cell phones to be off during takeoff and landing, because it's all about trying to figure out, like, well, should it, okay, a laptop. I guess a laptop's allowed, without making the flight attendants have to be well-versed in all the different devices.
But that doesn't that kind of break down with the fact that a lot of tablets also have cell connectivity? So how right. do you is know that this tablet has 3G and this one doesn't?
It doesn't break yeah. down, but it's less likely, because there are so many tablets that have Wi-Fi. So it's all about managing the possibility.
And I guess there's also a lot less people that have tablets versus people that have phones.
But wait a second. Greater number. Flight attendants are like well-versed in like first aid, and they know about all these regulations. They can't figure out where the airplane mode is on a phone or something. I don't think this is something you can't train.
First aid hasn't like changed that much in the last, you know,
and neither has
century.
Airplane mode. Like, okay, so an Android, you swipe down, you hit the airplane. You go to iPhone
Which
iOS.
Would you rather them spend their time on? Keeping up to date on the latest techniques in first aid
what do you mean,
or
rather?
All of the tablets
it doesn't
airplane
have to be
modes.
A choice. It's just like when there are new regulations when I'm driving a car. I mean, things change as you are doing stuff.
Your entire job is built around keeping up to date on these sorts of things. I get what you're saying, but I think it's a little more of a burden than you might think for somebody who's not immersed in technology.
Oh, I didn't say it's not a burden. It's a job, okay? You're getting paid to do a job. Do your job, whatever
yeah,
the heck
the
it is.
Yeah, the job is to be a flight attendant, not to be well-versed in tablets and be a social enforcer.
I think it's probably going to break down to e-ink versus not e-ink, by the way. When you're talking about readers, it's a lot easier to figure out what's a tablet or what's not. You go, that thing, it's black and white, I get it. But I just think that it's a little silly sometimes to think, okay, well, there's no way they could manage this. If there was a regulation that said, look, we need a uniform way to see that all things are in airplane mode, a little green light or something on every device, if it has to go that crazy, that's one thing. But I think Tom's right about the social behavior thing. They're never going to let you use Skype on your laptop, even though it's using their in-flight Wi-Fi. It's just annoying. So you want to make sure that people on this flight aren't like driving each other crazy throughout the whole time.
Yeah, that's the biggest complaint on most of the comments and all the stories I saw today is like, as long as they don't let people talk on cell phones. That seems to be
the
largest answer. Let's take a quick break and thank our other sponsor for today's show, Gazelle. If you're like, hey, wait a minute, I need a new tablet or phone to turn off during takeoff and landing. Gazelle's a great way to raise some cash by selling your old stuff. You want that new iPhone that might be coming out later? You want an iPad? New Galaxy S4, perhaps? HTC One? Before you get the new phone upgraded, all nice and clean, get rid of that old dirty one that's in the box. And if you're like, well, I got to get the new one before I can get rid of my old one, that's where Gazelle is awesome, because they'll lock in your quote for 30 days. So you can go right now to gazelle.com, G-A-Z-E-L-L-E.com. Tell them your device. Tell them the condition. They'll give you a quote of how much they'll pay. And that is good for 30 days. That gives you time to go get the new phone, set it all up. Then you can send Gazelle your old phone. They'll pay for the shipping. A lot of times they'll even give you a box. They'll even buy broken iPhones and iPads, and then you get paid fast by PayPal or check. iPhone 4, iPhone 4S, iPad 2, Samsung Galaxy S2, all of those are up there. They'll buy old laptops, Android, BlackBerry phones. What's your iPhone, your iPad, or your Android smartphone worth? Take a minute, go to gazelle.com, and find out. Sell your used iPhone or Samsung Galaxy smartphone today at gazelle.com. Mentioned Windows Blue leaked out over the weekend. Ayaz, what did we see?
At Windows Blue, we saw a bunch of screenshots, and The Verge even has a video showing off all of these new features that are in Windows Blue. It's not exactly a huge change. This is the upgrade to Windows 8. You'll see smaller tiles. Some people were joking, saying they're icon-sized. I guess that's true. There's new gestures to see all apps. There's a new settings panel for SkyDrive, so there's a lot more baked into there. You can upload your photos automatically. Some new applications will be unveiled. It'd be an alarm app, a calculator app, sound recorder, and a new version of Windows Movie Maker that they're calling Movie Moments. So a lot of this sounds like the applications you've had in regular Windows, but in that new flat style that Microsoft's using. IE also has a sync tab function, and there's new snap views. So instead of having this 80-20 split, you can do 50-50 or have up to four things up at one time.
I am. I'm really excited about that.
You're excited about having multiple windows up on a Windows device?
Well, to be able to do it in both interfaces.
Yeah, okay. Is that like a compromise to what's going on with the backlash for Windows 8, Tom, do you think? Because if we've had the 80-20 split, that new snap, but if they're doing 50-50 and now allowing more and more applications up at one time, isn't that kind of like the desktop?
I think what they're saying is, we hear you. Those of you using the tile interface who like it, that you want to be able to do more of those desktop things, that 80-20 is not good enough, that you want the ability to also do 50-50. And frankly, the snap feature in Windows 7 was one of my favorite features that they introduced. It seems like a small, silly thing, but it makes it so easy when you're moving back and forth, like cutting and pasting into our Google Doc, which is what I do all morning, to be able to go quickly between two windows like that. And of course, I would never use the tile interface because of that. But if I'm in the tile interface already for some reason, I don't have to go out of it now in certain situations because I can do that 50-50 split.
Dan, what do you think of these changes? One of the bigger things that's happening, actually a bigger thing as a tile, desktop can be an ultra like giant-sized tile because apparently the desktop is very important to people still. And a lot of the settings become a lot more easily accessible in the new start screen menu instead of having it with the desktop. Do you think it's going to get more people into this new style of Windows?
I mean, that's a great question. I'm not a big fan of the new style of the tiles and stuff like that. Maybe I'm old-fashioned or whatever. But like Windows 8 just doesn't do it for me. I mean, I always wind up in the desktop mode anyway. The only Windows machine that we have around here is the one that my accountant forces me to use because version of the accounting software that they require on our machine is here. That's it. I just don't like it. I don't like the switching back and forth between the new tile and the old school desktop, which just sort of shows up again. So like for me, anything that gives you a little bit more flexibility and makes these tiles a little bit more usable for people and more customizable seems like a good thing. But I'm probably outside the demographic of people who really get into this.
Yeah, and Blue's also, I'm sorry, Dan. Blue is also supposed to do some power management changes. Apparently with the new Intel processors coming out, the Haswell chips, that these devices, the running Windows 8, Windows Blue, and on a Haswell chip, they're supposed to get your battery life more like a tablet. So we're looking at Ultrabooks that would be thinner, and they'd be able to have longer battery life. This is according to CNET and its sources, saying that Microsoft's building these new power efficiency modes. Sarah, do you think laptops can make a comeback if these laptops could actually have crazy battery life like tablets, regardless of the operating system?
I think one of the things that I like tablets so much for is that if they're fully charged in the morning, I really don't have to worry about it, you know, unless I'm watching movies for like 14 hours. But yeah, I think there's more to it than just battery life. I think that people enjoy a new form factor. It kind of makes tech interesting again. I think that's a big reason why tablets have had so much success. But yeah, if laptops, which do offer, you know, my mom just asked me, she's going on vacation in a few days, like, can I survive with my iPad? I don't know. You know, I kind of, you know how much I like my laptop. That's still the way that a lot of people feel. So yeah, if a laptop can just be a stronger machine, sure.
I think the Windows Blue changes plus the longer battery life and all these changing form factors for laptops, you know, the convertibles, the whatever you want to call them at this point, I think that's really going to make Windows 8 actually have a chance. This first rev that they did is this, okay, we just changed everything, you guys can freak out. But this next rev, I think, with new hardware, could make it a lot more accepted anyway over time.
The tiny amount of us in the audience who use Google Reader, which is probably all the people in this audience, but maybe we were all the people that use Google Reader, got very upset when they announced they would be retiring it July 1st. Another reason, besides the small number of users, surfaced over the weekend. What's that about, Sarah?
Yeah, so Reader's shutting down on July 1st. And as Tom mentioned, we're all so, so sad about it. Google says, listen, this is a declining usage thing. Yes, many people enjoyed it, but not enough for us to commit the resources to the project. Sources are telling All Things D, it's not just about that. It's also about compliance issues, potentially privacy issues. Now, of course, we know that Google has gotten into trouble and had to pay out some money. We had the Wi-Fi sniffing incident. That was finally, that was put to rest. Google had to end up paying about $7 million. There was the installing ad cookies on Safari browser users. Google ended up having to pay for that as well. So although Google can afford it, it's a pain, right? Google wasn't prepared to take on issues with lawyers. They didn't have policy experts that had committed their resources to Reader. In fact, there was no actual full-time product manager or engineer responsible for Reader at the time that Google decided to shut it down. Again, these are anonymous sources. And not only did they not have people who were committed to Reader, but they apparently didn't want to beef up the infrastructure and the staff. Okay, so you think, well, if Reader is a viable product that people love, why didn't Google just spin it out? They've done that with internal products in the past. Apparently, it was too integrated within Google Apps. So it became almost easier just to shut it down rather than commit resources that Google either didn't have or didn't want to commit to the project and didn't really feel like trying to figure out how to pull it out of the Google Apps experience without making it more of a headache for everybody. Now, Google hasn't said how many people were using Reader. You know, they don't have a great graph that shows us how much users had declined over the years. But Flipboard CEO Mike McHugh says 2 million people have connected their Google Reader accounts to Flipboard. Well, I would venture a guess that not everybody using Google Reader is also using Flipboard. So you figure, well, it's probably somewhere over 2 million people. Maybe double that, something like that. I don't know. I mean, Dan, does this rumor sound like it makes sense? I mean, Google's a huge company. To me, it's like you hire a lawyer, you hire a project manager, you throw some engineers at Google Reader. Is it really that hard for them to add people to keep the experience alive?
I couldn't possibly agree with you more. One thing Google does not have a problem with is resources. They've got tons of money. They've got tons of people. You know what? Maybe they need a lawyer. Maybe they need 10 lawyers. Maybe they need 100 lawyers. And maybe all of them make 100,000. But it doesn't matter to Google. That doesn't matter to them. This is not, that can't be the main reason why. They can get whatever they need. I do think that the integration with Google Apps and the integration into their services would make it impossible for them to sort of peel out of there and put in another infrastructure without giving away too much of their code or something like that. But at the same time, when you think about Google and you think about what they are as a company, they are a company that wants to get a lot of data about its users. Look at Google Analytics, for example. That is a wonderful, wonderful way for them to learn things about usage and behavior of web visitors. That's something that's very, very valuable to them. I would argue that that Google Reader was equally valuable because it helps them know what do people read. But Google Reader had very, and maybe you guys did use this, but again, we're talking about Flipboard here. We're talking about Reader like the iOS app. We're talking about this as now really a service that people were using. Unlike Gmail, where I think most Gmail users, and I shouldn't say most, a lot of Gmail users are using Gmail. They're using the web interface. And this is very useful because Google can display their ads in there. They can watch how people use it. They can, of course, read all of the email and do things with it. Whereas with Google Reader, this was very much more and more and more a behind-the-scenes kind of service that they were providing. And unlike Google Analytics, where you're getting tons and tons of information because it's embedded on every page, now you've got something that is becoming less and less valuable for them from the data mining standpoint, and much more valuable as a service that other people have just built applications on top of. And I don't think that that's necessarily something Google cares that much about.
Yeah, it's really smart, Dan. I think what we're seeing here, in fact, is Google saying we need to put our resources elsewhere, not we don't have enough resources. And if this is true, it's probably a rationalization where it's like, we want to make this decision anyway. And gosh, it's not only the developers, it's also the privacy people that we'd have to put on it. And so therefore, you know, we're getting rid of it. Let's finish off talking about Delegate Gary Howell of West Virginia and his pending legislation to ban the pending product, Google Glass, from the faces of West Virginians. Iaz, you're a retired lawyer. Yeah. How does this strike you? Is this an undue burden on the populace?
No, not yet. The product's not even out yet. I don't want to freak out that there's no law yet and there's no product yet. So if people can't drive with Google Glass on, I mean, there's always this thing. There's already a thing for reckless driving. Why add these things specifically? I don't know. Maybe you just want to get headlines. Google Glass, or if it's talking to your phone or talking into your phone, there's always somebody who's like, oh, that new technology, it's going to kill us.
In all seriousness, I think he's probably doing this to make a name for himself. Maybe he really does believe it. Maybe he is really a tech fan and he's just ahead of the game. But once the product comes out and we get other products like this that are competing, how should they be handled? Is it a real danger? What do you think, Dan?
No, I think, you know, every state has its own laws about texting and phone calls and things like that. And I have here, I'm pretty sure in Texas, I think it's legal to do both. Although there are plenty of signs that discourage you from doing that. Anything that's a distraction while you're driving, I think you should have second thoughts about. The idea of the Google Glass is pretty cool. And I think it's inevitable that we'll have this around at some point. I think it's weird that West Virginia is jumping out right now, prohibiting this before it even exists. But I think if this saves some people's lives, I know this sounds like, you know, I'm getting a little sentimental now. But if this saves some lives, I'm okay with it. Driving, and I have to remind everybody about this, driving is a privilege, right? It's not a right. We are driving because we are being allowed to drive by the state that we live in. If they want to impose ridiculous limitations, I'm not saying this one is ridiculous, but I'm saying if they do, we have to go along with that because we don't have a right to drive. We have a privilege to drive. I think Gary Howell, am I saying that right, Howell? Definitely trying to make a name for himself and jump out and get some headlines. And look at this. We're talking about it, so it's working. But I think that there are a lot of things, the idea that you now have little screens over your eyes at all times now, that can be displaying data and you can be looking at that data even while you're driving. That's a concern to me. I've got kids. I want people paying attention to the road. So, you know, there you go.
Sarah, is it incumbent upon Google to come out with the self-driving cars and Google Glass at the same time?
Exactly. I mean, that's the solution, right? I mean, if they could just get the timing a little bit closer together, then this would be a moot conversation. I haven't been able to use Google Glass and drive, so I have no idea how distracting or not distracting it would be. I know that, I mean, even when I'm in my car and I'm, changing the radio station or whatever, I mean, it doesn't take much, right? It does not take much for you to go, whoa, I feel like I just almost didn't see that turn or that person cut in front of me. I mean, driving is just, it's a dangerous activity. I was in a recent car accident, so I'm just like, ugh. Anything that makes a driver more distracted, even if it's a tiny thing, can literally be a life or death situation. So I understand why people are worried. We just, we need some data on this before we start passing legislation.
I think you hit on it. And actually, all of you guys have hit on it, which is don't drive while distracted. Pay attention to what you're doing.
Maybe we should go a little bit further. Let's take out the radio, no dashboards. I mean, I'm constantly looking down at my speed. I want to see how I'm doing. So, I mean, that's a distraction. There are other cars out there, too. They shouldn't be out there. So we should be driving without any of those distractions.
All right. Let's get away from any kind of driving and get into flying in the randomizer. This was an interesting promotion for the upcoming Star Trek Into Darkness movie that happened in London during Earth Hour, when you're supposed to have the lights off, apparently. They sent 30 LED-tagged Asktek hummingbirds up into the sky. Ars Electronica Future Lab was responsible for this in a formation that formed the Star Trek Federation symbol over Tower Bridge in London.
That is so freaking cool. This is the way you do promotions.
Wow.
Ooh. It's also the way that you teach the robots too much.
That's so cool.
If you're just listening to the audio.
It looks like something at Disneyland, doesn't it? It's like the Tinkerbell Army.
Yeah, you got to go check this. If you're on the audio podcast, you got to go check out this link at Engadget.com. Or just look quadricopter Star Trek. Lots of people have this picture up. It's a nice feat in flying, in remote drone flying there, to be honest, to get everything in place like that. We're just all off.
Oh, because it's Into the Darkness. How did I not get that? It took me forever. Yeah. It just hit me now.
Get it?
It's really, really cool.
Oh. Yeah, very, very cool. Let's see what's on the calendar.
All right, Tom. The Sony Xperia ZL is going on pre-order for United States customers. Off contract, we got $720 for the HSPA version, $760 for LTE version. And tomorrow, T-Mobile has an event in New York where it will detail further changes to technology and business.
Hmm.
Ooh.
Both kinds of music, country and Western. Let's see what's incoming.
Incoming message.
I got an email from Larson. He says, I was thinking that the reason why the prices are higher in Australia is because the Australian dollar used to be worth less than it is now, so they made the prices higher in AU dollars. Now that there's parity, or close to it, they're trying to justify the higher prices because they like getting more money. That's my thought on the matter. We've got a bunch of emails that said effectively the same thing. Yeah, I guess maybe because of the currency fluctuations, that's why Australia's prices still seem really ridiculous.
Makes perfect sense because the companies are like, well, that's the price it's been. Why lower it?
Got another email from Oscar in El Paso who says, I'd like to add to your discussion about relevant travel information on your phone while also having something printed. This was a business opportunity that was being missed. I wanted to let you know someone's tried it. Frommer's and HP got together to make custom travel guides where you would give it the city you were visiting, the hotel you were staying in, any site that you were planning on going to, and it would generate a book with Bing maps and directions along with Frommer's data for your specific trip. There was a site that could give you more information. Sadly, if you click on the Get Started button, you receive a message that says Frommer's Remix by HP is not currently available. This is not something that I had ever used. Sounds like at least at one point it was a good resource, though.
Well, and this reminded me of Offbeat Guides, which the former Technorati CEO David Sifri founded back in 2008. I remember interviewing him when I was at CNET. That apparently is still around. But the thing is, in both these cases, the mistake I think they made is having them print it and send it to you. And what I was talking about on the show the other day is something you just print yourself and is smaller and more like a brochure thing that you can fold up and just kind of carry in a pocket. And then you have an app that is complimentary, so you kind of get the best of both worlds. But good find, Oscar. Thanks for the email. Yeah. And that's it for our show. Thank you, Dan Benjamin, for joining us today. I'm a little busy every day of the week with Tech News Today, but I definitely would love to be on a 5x5 show at some point, anytime.
Then we've got to make it happen, man. You got to stop avoiding me.
Yeah, I'm not avoiding you. Just call my people. They'll route the call through. No, all I'm right. Just kidding.
Listen, a guy like you has, you know, you got to have handlers. I appreciate this. I'm not, you know, we'll make it work.
It's my two dogs for my handlers. That's why you're not getting any email back. But no, tell folks about 5x5, what they can find, and what you guys are up to these days.
I'm sorry, you broke up a little bit on me there.
Oh, I'd say sorry. That. No, Skype's not being nice to us today.
Yeah, it's been.
What's new with 5x5 these days?
I mean, you know, we're always trying to come out with some new shows. We're always expanding, and you know, we do a little new show in the morning, and I've got a new show that I do every Friday called Quit, which helps people redefine their jobs or maybe leave their jobs or start something awesome, and that's a call-in show, so it's a lot of fun. And you know, people, if you want, go to 5by5.tv and check it out. I'm sure you'll find something. Your audience, especially, I think, will find something that you'll like there, because you've got a lot of geeks here, and that's where, absolutely, you know. Where they'll be right at home at 5x5 too.
Thanks again, Dan. And thank you all for watching or listening and submitting stories in our subreddit, technewstoday.reddit.com. It's the place to go to find all the great stories that people in the audience are submitting. And you can submit them, or you can just vote on what other people are submitting. Vote up, vote down. Helps us decide what to put in the show each day. You can find us on the web at twit.tv/TNT. You can email us, tnt@twit.tv, or give us a call. Leave us a voicemail, 260-TNT-SHOW. Will Harris joins us tomorrow. We'll see you then.